From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
On Wednesday, there were commemorations of the events of September 11th, 2001, held around the United States, but some very important events that had dire consequences for people of another country took place on September 11th with heavy U.S. involvement. That was the coup d'etat against the government of Salvador Allende in Chile, September 11th, 1973. With that and more, we go to our reporter from south of the border, Tony Solo, reporting from Managua, Nicaragua.
That anniversary for Latin America is a fundamental one in the sense that it completely set the U.S. policy that no democratically elected progressive alternative will be tolerated in Latin America.
The specter of that coup has haunted left-wing governments in Latin America ever since. You know, this is what will happen to you if you're too successful.
But it haunts right-wing people too, because even Colin Powell, you know, the white dust man at the UN, you know, he felt that he had in a certain sense to apologize for that, and that was a huge admission of guilt from Colin Powell. And so, you know, but in terms of what it meant for South America and Latin America in general. And obviously it was a fundamental event because, as you say, it led to the dictatorship of Augusto Pinochet. And it also made it possible for the dictatorships in Uruguay and Argentina. And also at that time, I think that Bolivia too was under a right-wing government. And all through the 70s and into the early 80s, it wasn't until the Malvinas War when Argentina, the Argentinian military junta collapsed, that there was a serious blow against that national security state model. That's what the model was called, the national security state, whereby national security was deemed to be the priority in the fight against communism. And of course, and the irony is that Salvador Allende was democratically elected. But despite that, that could not be tolerated. What was it that Henry Kissinger said? We can't allow the Chilean people to, what was that phrase that he used?
Well, there were a number. One was he was going to make the economy scream. That was one of the things that they wanted to do. It was that they can't allow him to make this mistake, I think, or something.
Right. We can't allow communism to take hold in Latin America just because the Chilean people have made a mistake.
Right.
There was something along those lines, and you see that now, and that fundamental Monroe Doctrine policy that the United States won't allow interlopers from outside or foreign influences from outside the Americas to take root and build an alternative model to the United States free market capitalism. And that has been absolutely constant, and that explains, everything that happened around Chile is happening now without the overt military intervention or support for a military intervention for now from the United States, because in Venezuela you have exactly the same economic campaign against Nicolas Maduro's government there, and economic sanctions trying to make the economy scream, trying to impose such hardship and suffering on the Venezuelan people that they'll at some future electoral moment will vote against the government of Nicolas Maduro. But that whole motif is tweaked in various ways now, because you have the emphasis on military aggression or military subversion Trump has shifted to a kind of media psychological, what some people call fourth generation warfare, whereby the target government is subject to diplomatic sanctions, media sanctions in the sense that nothing good will be published about whatever that government does. And everything that that government does is bad. So you have that massive media campaign, not just inside the country by the opposition media and opposition political parties,
globally.
But more importantly, globally, so that internationally, there's a context in which it's possible for any kind of lie, the most ridiculous counterfactual lie, can be used and publicly stated as if it were fact. And because that media and diplomatic campaign has been so carefully prepared, usually many years in advance, over decades, creating false beliefs that even people in positions of power come to actually believe, like, you know, it doesn't matter whether they believe it or not, but it's plausible for them to believe it,
right?
Because that whole context has been created,
right?
And we saw that was it yesterday or the day before in Geneva, where ironically Michelle Bachelet, who's the daughter of, and she herself suffered torture at the hands of the Pinochet regime, and I can't remember what happened to her father. He may well have been one of the Pinochet's victims. He was a general in the army, I think. But and it's so ironic that of all people, Michelle Bachelet is now applying that kind of corollary to the Monroe doctrine. Attacking the governments of Venezuela and Nicaragua with reports that are completely false, and that something that's really extraordinary for anybody who kind of still has faith in, you know, I'm reporting and, you know, checking your facts and all that kind of stuff.
Look, let me just say this. Okay, I got the quote for you. First of all, this is Henry Kissinger. This is U.S. policy, towards Latin America, the Monroe Doctrine corollary that instituted by Kissinger in 1973. I don't see why we need to stand by and watch a country go communist due to the irresponsibility of its own people. The issues are much too important for the Chilean voters to be left to decide for themselves. That's the perspective. Now, her father, Alberto Bachelet, was a brigadier general in Chile's Air Force who opposed the coup d'etat in 1973. He went to prison, and they tortured him for a few months until he died, 1974.
Right.
So, she got the memo. Okay.
Right.
She's not going to be standing up.
Yeah, and in Chile, one of the reasons that the right wing continue to be successful there, apart from the fact that they murdered their a whole generation of progressive opposition,
right,
they just murdered them and sent them into exile through the 70s and 80s.
Right.
So that's one reason why there isn't a stronger progressive movement in Chile.
Yep.
But the other reason is that because people like Bachelet have made that compromise, they've made that social democrat compromise, trying to promote a neoliberal model, and it's so ironic that Bachelet is criticizing Venezuela and Nicaragua for apparently repressive policies when her own government allowed very repressive police measures against demonstrations that were genuinely peaceful.
Yeah, they haven't denazified Chile, so you have a lot of that institutional problem that survived, you know, into her government and still survives.
Yeah, and so going back to her false reports, there were two reports from her office. She's the, we should explain that she's the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights. And her office produced a couple of reports, one on Venezuela and one on Nicaragua, and they're condemning the governments there for being repressive and making a series of unsubstantiated claims about press censorship, which is completely ridiculous here in Nicaragua. Torture, which is also ridiculous. I mean, her own organization it stated very clearly when their team was here in Nicaragua that they found no evidence of torture on the part of the Nicaraguan authorities, but they still included that false claim in their report. You know, it's just bizarre.
Well, and you know that she has a...
Let me give you an idea from my own experience of how false these reports are. That their report claimed that last year there were peaceful demonstrations in Esteli, but as a result of police repression, a couple of young people were killed in the context of peaceful demonstrations. Now, I was here. I know what happened. I mean, a group of around 500, maybe more, maybe less, attacked our town hall. And they tried to burn it down with Molotov cocktails. They laid siege to it for something like 4 hours with municipal workers inside the building trying to fend them off. And they caused something like, I've forgotten the exact figure, I think it's around $70,000, $80,000 worth of damage to the municipal building, local authority vehicles and so on, and neighboring businesses that are adjacent to our town hall. Now, in the report, that's what they claim. The UN report claims that this was a peaceful protest. But I spoke to our mayor here about 2 weeks ago and asked him, Pancho, everybody calls him Pancho, his name's Francisco. And Pancho, what did you say to the United Nations High Commission people and the people from the Inter-American Commission when they contacted you about the attack on the town hall? And he said, nobody ever contacted me from any of those organizations or any foreign human rights organization.
Oh, my goodness.
So just there's a very concrete example of how false they are. They make a report, but they haven't even bothered to talk to the main protagonist of the events in question. You know, and so
that's ridiculous. I mean, that's fundamental.
But in a global context, in an international context, what you get is this kind of Punch and Judy show, because it's all theatre. It's not.
Yeah.
There's no. So what people looking at that see is, oh, the UN has condemned Nicaragua and Venezuela, and the Nicaraguan and Venezuelan governments have rejected that report. So what are they to make of that?
Right.
But and there's no reality there. I've just given you an example of the reality.
No, I get it. That's at the basis of a lot of this stuff.
Right.
Well, you know, one of the things when you were describing before, you know, that condition with as far as it goes with the media, I mean, you want to know who is it that has the power to actually do this? Like, who writes the script that everybody reads from every day? Who's actually, you know, dictating that script? I'll put it that way. Somebody else is, you know, playing scribe. But who's got the power? Who owns that apparatus? And, you know, who gets to apply it to their purposes? Because even here, they allowed that creature, you know, they nurtured that creature into existence. They've targeted the president, sitting president of the United States, with the same apparatus. Right. There is not a thing that he could possibly do that they would say on MSNBC, CNN, ABC, you know, the CBS, on and on, where they would say a positive word about him. Not a thing.
Right.
Unless he blew something up and killed a lot of people, then they would hedge it. Say, well, if the president's been zigzagging all over the place yesterday, maybe by accident he did something good. He blew up a lot of stuff. But tomorrow we think he's going to try that dopey peacenik stuff again. Now we better watch out, or else Christian civilization, sorry, non-sectarian civilization will come to a close before Thursday morning. You know, it's like crazy. It's insane. And, and this is something that, you know, in a much smaller country, I mean, the American people have been primed for this for years. They've been cutting out civics and, you know, all kinds of things that where people get educated in basic, you know, government operation, you know, the social concepts, etc. The average person graduating from a university has very little knowledge of that kind of stuff now in the United States. So whatever comes out of that box that they're trained to watch from the time they, you know, can look up out of a crib, that's pretty much gospel. And self-evident once it's on TV. So that's what we're getting. And this is what we've been dishing out all over the world for, you know, since they invented the first boxes.
Yeah, and but I know what the thing that is extremely sinister is that, that false media disinformation has now infiltrated into important institutions like the UN. So even the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights is now repeating these false beliefs from one year to the next.
Yep.
And these false beliefs turn into false memories. So people, if you say Nicolas Maduro dictator, oh yay, that's right, Nicolas Maduro, he's that dictator in Venezuela.
Right, that's right.
And people will think that, and that is their reality, and it's all false. So,
hey, let me just give me one sentence in between before you go to your next point. It's just on this. Not only has it been, is it as pervasive as it always was, but with the advent of these cell phone, you know, internet connection boxes, people and whole generations now are being socialized with this thing in hand. People have almost every communication that they have with the outside world mediated by this apparatus, whereas before, at least if you were in a room full of people, you had direct relations with them. Now even those social settings, you're engaged instead in some mediated conversation. So you have very little first-hand information about the world relative to any generation ahead of us.
Yeah, and that explains why for people like me in a country, a small country like Nicaragua, anywhere in the world, and there's a complete disconnect between what we live. And Brian Wilson, the Veterans for Peace activist, and he lives in Grenada in south of Managua,
right.
And I remember him saying in a video that his experience was, he was shocked that his experience of the events of 2018 was the exact opposite of what was being reported on the news.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, and that's a very, I think that's a very general experience for people at grassroots in countries around the world. They're just completely dumbfounded at the fact that their experience is the exact opposite of what's being reported in Western media. So, but going back to Michelle Bachelet, the incredible thing about her reports, and she had, there's nothing about Colombia, and she her
where they're murdering
five social activists, I think it was five social activists were killed in one day the other day, in Colombia, right? And in Honduras the other day, a Garifuna activist, Mirna Garifuna, an ethnic minority of African descent in Honduras, and they've been fighting for years to defend their land against encroachments by local business people in Honduras, and some backed by foreign interests from Canada and the United States. But she was murdered. There was nothing about that. If an indigenous people's activist had been murdered in Nicaragua or Venezuela, It would have been all over the news. Amnesty International would be screaming. The Michelle Bachelet would be making indignant noises about continuing repression, blah blah blah. But because it happens in countries that are allies of the United States, there's zero coverage. There isn't even any news coverage in North America and Europe of these events. And
that's right.
In Colombia, the situation is deteriorating because, and as we mentioned last week, some elements of the former FARC guerrilla have taken up arms again, and so that means that there's an increasing level of conflict in Colombia, But why is that? And the increasing level of conflict in Colombia is because the right. You remember when we were talking about the problems facing the Colombian peace agreement, and when a couple of years ago we started right. talking about that.
Sure.
Yeah. And one of the problems is that the agreement made no effective provision for dismantling the paramilitary structure controlled by the Colombian authorities and the Colombian army.
Which was the same problem you said then. This is the same problem that the previous peace agreement had, because what ended up happening was as soon as the FARC or its predecessors had disarmed, that they went on the government-sponsored and quote-unquote independent death squads went out on patrol, basically, and started killing right. people again.
Yeah, and the context is slightly different because there's a much stronger peace movement, and you have social democrat leaders like Gustavo Petro who are challenging the authorities to some extent, and they have quite a strong electoral base. But even Petro, for example, it feels bound to condemn the Maduro dictatorship in Venezuela, you know, and this is one of the main opposition leaders in Colombia, and who's regarded as progressive in Colombia's political spectrum. But even he did not recognize the presidential elections last year in Venezuela, and continues to refer right. to Nicolas Maduro as a dictator, and, right. which is just bizarre. But the reason he's doing that is because the Colombian political context is so far to the right, with outright fascists like Álvaro Uribe calling the shots, that it's extremely difficult to maintain even minimal progressive political positions.
Yeah.
So that's, but, and then, sorry. So then you look at that, there's all that, all the dreadful human rights abuses in Colombia that the people like Michelle Bachelet, to their eternal shame, have completely failed to address in an effective way, given the tools and the instruments at their disposal. They could make a difference in Colombia, and they haven't. And that's, you know, what an indictment of the UN human rights system.
Yeah.
So then, continuing in that vein, if you shift to Argentina, you see there the deep social problems, increasing poverty and real hunger taking place now in Argentina.
As predicted. Yep.
But why is that happening? We go back then to what we started with, the U.S. insistence on its Monroe Doctrine, signaled right. so viciously back in September the 11th, 1973, against the government of Salvador Allende. And why is the situation in Argentina as extreme as it was? Because the kind of right-wing government that the United States favors would manage to get into power in Argentina right. and impose that suffering on the Argentinian people.
Yep.
And you can see the same thing happening in Brazil with the government of Bolsonaro. But can we shift from that larger continental perspective to a narrower Central American perspective?
Yeah, for sure.
And if you look at what look at what's happening in Guatemala, you have the Guatemala's president and its legislature have just declared a state of siege. That's a military regime has been imposed on 22 municipalities in northern Guatemala, right?
Yeah.
Some, on the pretext that they want to control, they need to do this to control the violence in the in those areas.
You're talking now, about what we would call here martial law, right?
Martial law. They've imposed martial law on 22 municipalities. Now, Giamatte, the country's new president, at the same, it's incredible, and they in the same moment that they're imposing martial law on those 22 municipalities, he's saying, we have to condemn the dictatorship in Nicaragua. Right? And there's complete, it's complete, and then nobody, people look at that, people receive that from the news, and they seem to be unable to understand the contradictions. And then in Costa Rica, too, and I mentioned the case in Honduras where the continuing repression against social movements there has just claimed the life of an indigenous people's activist.
Yep.
But the crisis, and also another journalist was killed in Honduras recently. In the States you don't hear about that unless you're an activist on Central American affairs that takes an interest in these things.
Right.
And then in Costa Rica, the unions are up in arms, and I think there's going to be another teachers' strike this week, because the government there is imposing a whole range of neoliberal reforms, and they've in order to meet the public sector spending crisis, they've increased VAT on which is a tax that that impacts the most vulnerable people in Costa Rica, and they're completely in the service of the local Costa Rican business elites, and now what they've done to further attack labor union rights is they've got a judgment from the Auditor General of Costa Rica claiming that a fiscal reform, a tax reform that the government has introduced that had accompanied by anti-labor measures restricting trades union rights, that the Auditor General has issued this judgment that affects the way the social security system works,
right.
And it affects the benefits that workers receive, and you can across the region you can see in Central America except for Nicaragua is the only exception to this, you can see the constant application of these nitty-gritty neoliberal measures chipping away at people's rights to labor's rights to organize so that people can defend themselves against the neoliberal attack on their basic living standards and on their fundamental rights to organize as labor unions. And then in El Salvador, you have this figure, this Nayib Bukele figure. He's been in office now for about 3 months, 3 or 4 months, and his neoliberal policies are beginning to bite now. He sacked thousands of public sector workers, claiming that they need to do so in order to bring public spending under control. And it's so ironic that now in this month of September, in 1821, September the 15th, that's the independence anniversary for Central America. But virtually all those countries, with the exception of Nicaragua, are completely under the thumb of the people that they
right.
that they sought independence from all through the 19th century.
I know, that is ironic. We have to stop here because we are completely out of time. But we will come back to this point next week and appreciate your time this week.
Okay, Don. Thanks a million. Look forward to talking to you next time.
The same. Thank you.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.